Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we are back with the second part of our weather-related disaster information episode with our special guests and our regular crew here on the Disaster Podcast. So stay tuned and check this out coming right up. And also wanted to make sure you're checking out all of our episodes over at disasterpodcast.com or via whatever podcast catching application you might use. Remember, there's always ways to subscribe whatever your device is that you're using to get podcasts. So head on over to disasterpodcast.com. You'll find a link in every episode to subscribe, and you can subscribe using whatever device or application you like to use to catch your podcasts. That's it. Let's go ahead and get on into part two of this episode on disaster-related weather information.
You know, we've done a lot of, which we are going to do very shortly, preparation discussion for people, especially as we move into certain seasons like hurricane season. Do you think, you know, people just tend to have the it can't happen to me mindset? It always happens to weather. You know, there's something about that TV screen. Well, it happens there and I'll watch it, but that's not here. And, you know, as much as we try to prepare them through whatever route Kyle was talking about, do you think after an event where things went sideways and they hadn't prepared when they certainly knew what they should have done, do you think that they're, Becky and anybody else that wants to comment on that, do you think there's like a survivor's guilt behind that? Or, gee, if I'd done this differently, or, you know, had a safer place to go, or all of that, you know, is there's going to be some sequela, mental health sequela from that, don't you think?
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I don't know that I'd really quite consider that particular aspect of it. I would think certainly in the case of people that are responsible for other people or pets, and should something have happened and it was on them to prepare and help people stay safe. I know teachers, I would think, have a lot of survivor's guilt if they've gone through a situation where a tornado or something has hit their school building. I also think that if you have gone through an event and another one comes around, like, for example, Irene and Sandy, I talked to a lot of people at the Jersey Shore who had very, very different preparations for Sandy versus Irene because they had gone through Irene and had seen exactly what a tropical storm or hurricane could do to their home. And so many people made the choice to evacuate during Sandy based on their experience during Irene. So I certainly think the past experience in storms does and should have a significant impact on how you view future threats moving forward.
Yeah, so in a sense, that's a good thing, I guess, that experience. Well, yeah. We're going to switch gears here in a minute and talk about hurricane season coming up, but I wanted to throw out any thoughts you guys had on the volcano in Hawaii. I mean, that's not something we've ever discussed because we just don't generally get those. But Becky, you were saying there's like 19 fissures that have opened since May 3rd, and then they had that 6.9 earthquake and, of course, the aftershocks. What is the perspective on that and what may yet still happen?
You know, that's not something I've looked too closely into. I mean, I do think officials are anticipating an eruption. It was kind of erupting again today. I don't know if that counts as, you know, the big one. But it just seems like a very volatile time for Hawaiians right now. Everything is just really unsettled, but I wouldn't say that's a way of life out there. This is certainly much more extreme than what I'm sure they're used to, but they do live, you know, on the Ring of Fire, in a very, I don't know what the word I'm trying to say is, a very unsettled part, you know, of the planet. But I think it seems like people are taking it fairly in stride and evacuating when they need to. So hopefully that continues. I mean, there have been a lot of evacuations that have been going on all across the region.
Yeah, that's got to be scary, just watching something coming slowly that's going to eat your house. What do you think, Kyle, about the volcano?
Well, Sam, I think as with any other natural hazard, We really have to be, as consumers of all the information that's being shared out there, make sure that we're following official sources. So, the Hawaii Civil Defense and Emergency Management folks, the local, the county level, the city level leaders, Governor Dave Ige has been great at sharing information, directing people back to official sources. And if you're curious about it, what's currently going on, follow USGS Volcanoes on Twitter, right? Get the information from the experts on that topic, because there's plenty of digital and social media experts out there. But there was a lot of misinformation going around over the past week, and talking about concerns with now with Kilauea, now we have concerns about all these volcanoes in the Northwest United States, and it's like, well, they're not part of the same system. Yes, there's always a concern, but one does not equal the other. So a lot of agencies have been really good about dispelling rumors. And with the action today, as we're talking here, ash clouds being reported as high as 10 to 12,000 feet, with ash fall occurring up to 18 miles downwind of the volcano. So this is very, very active. And this is something that I actually was reminded of today, is that there's actually a watch, warning, and advisory system for volcanoes as well. And we're currently in the red warning, which is major volcanic eruption imminent, underway, and with hazardous activity both on the ground and in the air. So do take these things seriously. And if you got folks that you know that are in or around that area, reach out to them and make sure they're following the official sources.
Wow, it's pretty scary to think about. Jamie, you keep up with the news.
No, I think Kyle did a pretty good job of mentioning everything I was thinking of, that we had mentioned earlier, that there was an expectation or a prediction of a potential explosive eruption, which would, from my understanding, occurs when as the fissures open up, it drains the central opening of the volcano. The lava spreads out, and as that lava falls down and lowers down, they're worried about it reaching the point where it's at the same level as the water table. And what happens apparently is that it superheats steam to the point that it causes an explosive eruption. So that's something that they're watching for. So it's just one of those things that, they keep saying that it could happen. They're not saying it's definitely imminent, but it's one of those things that are in the news, and something, again, that you need to, as Kyle said, look and follow official sources like the U.S. Geological Service and their volcano reports. So things like that, local emergency response, local emergency management agencies are really the primary source, because they know what the local hazards are. Hawaii's emergency response community knows how to manage people with evacuating from volcanoes. They know what to do. This is part of their plan. Just as Florida plans for hurricanes. And so we need to respect that and let them do their job.
Absolutely. So, Joe, is there any search and rescue events going on over there?
I'm not aware of anything to date. There's an alert out, for some teams on the West Coast just in case. But it sounds like, much like, I guess, hurricanes to some extent, they're slow moving enough and predictable enough, and I use that word very carefully here, just in that you sort of know the area that's involved, but obviously the volatility is there a lot. So there are resources in place and ready to go should something significant happen, but hopefully it'll continue to move along at a relatively slow pace and allow time for evacuations and response, et cetera, without surprising anybody too much.
Yeah, hopefully not. I feel bad for those people that actually watched their home slowly burn down and they knew it was coming. So, Becky, we're right on the edge of hurricane season, and I hear there's already been some storms forming out there. How do you think this year may compare with last year? Do we have any idea?
So, yeah, hurricane forecasting the entire season out is a pretty difficult thing. And the National Hurricane Center does put out a seasonal forecast, as do a lot of outlets like AccuWeather. but it's really just kind of something to just take in and have in the back of your mind as you're going through your typical preparations, which you should do regardless of what the season is forecast to be, because it only takes one storm to wreak havoc. I wouldn't say there's storms forming just yet. There is a very slight possibility. It's a 10% chance of cyclone formation off of the west coast of Florida right now. But really all that means is that there's a very broad area of tropical moisture that's kind of sitting in the Gulf and producing a lot of heavy rain and thunderstorms over Florida right now. So it's not organized. I don't really anticipate it becoming organized, although I haven't looked at the long-range models recently. But hurricane season starts in 16 days, starts on June 1st. It's kind of hard to believe it's already here, honestly. But it's a six-month season. It goes from June 1st through the end of November, with the peak season being kind of August, September, October. And that is when we saw the majority of the very strong storms last season. Were in mostly in September and October. But now is the time to prepare. Now is the time to make sure you know your risk. Are you in a flood zone? Has there been storm surge in your area before? What kinds of events have happened in your area? If you're new to the area, what are the evacuation routes? Where are the evacuation zones, like the Red Cross shelters? Where would you go? Things like that. There's a lot to consider here. Just a lot to consider, a lot to take into account. If you live anywhere on the Gulf Coast, I shouldn't even list locations because there's so many areas that are at risk for hurricanes, all over the world, really.
Well, I want to get back to that thought, but you said something that I know probably confuses a lot of people. Maybe Kyle can address that. The difference between a cyclone and a tornado. Or a hurricane. I mean, the terms somehow get confusing. Kyle?
Sure, Sam. So cyclone versus tornado. We'll tackle that one. Basically, it describes two spiraling storms, each of which can be very destructive. Tornadoes form from supercell thunderstorms and can be anywhere from very narrow, so just a couple of tens of yards to upwards of, say, 2 miles wide on the very, very upward scale. And the strongest winds for those are very much concentrated within the entire core of that feature on the tornado. Cyclone, it's another name for you can call it another name for a hurricane as well. And with hurricanes, of course, average diameter for those is about 300 miles across, but the strongest winds centered in the very, very core, in those eyewall bands there in the center of that hurricane. So we're talking about, two different wind, destructive features, each that brings its own hazard. Tornadoes, you're more concerned about the super hyperlocal strong winds. Hurricanes, you have, a multitude of hazards from, yes, everyone's like, oh, the wind and the eyewall. Well, yes, but you have the floods, you have storm surge, you have inland flooding and all that on top of it as well. And of course, don't forget, hurricanes can also spawn tornadoes.
Oh, my, yes. So, Vicki, looking at the areas that were affected by Harvey and Irma and Maria and a whole bunch of them, have they recovered significantly? How do you think those folks feel right now about going into another hurricane season with this rather fresh on their minds?
I think people are really apprehensive. I think the last thing they want to hear is hurricane season. Irma, I was down in Florida a couple of months ago. There's still destruction that's very evident that it hasn't been cleaned up yet. Just kind of houses along the coast that are just abandoned at this point. Still a lot of recovery going on in Texas. Puerto Rico still is struggling to even maintain power 6-8 months later, which is just unbelievable and sad. So I really think the last thing anybody down there wants to hear is that it's time for hurricane season again. I don't know how people don't even have roofs over their head yet in some locations. Particularly like Puerto Rico. So I think it's I think it's going to be a challenge this year for meteorologists to be able to convey the threat of a hurricane without coming across as without too much hyperbole, I guess, to really be cognizant of the fact that a lot of these people are dealing with significant storm anxiety and PTSD. And it's sort of, maybe it doesn't fall to us, but I think more so, more now, meteorology is turning into a field of communication. So I think it is up to us to really just be aware of how we're communicating this message and how it might be perceived, and really just try and approach it from that standpoint and encourage people to be as prepared as possible. Kyle, what are your thoughts on that? I'm curious.
Yeah, it absolutely will be a challenge in terms of communication with the, you know, with these events, when people experience an event, that resets what they reference all of those future events back to. So for the people that live on the Great Plains, it may be a tornado that they've personally or their family has personally experienced. And now back to our outbreak discussion, right? Well, that's not an outbreak to me because I was part of an outbreak and this happened to me. So it'll never be like that again. So, right, it's relating and we're having to battle now where it used to be, oh, well, if you can relate the impacts of a hazard or a thing like a hurricane, for example, hey, the impacts from this hurricane will be similar to, you know, insert storm here that would have caused similar impacts. If that materializes, you may do very well. So if it doesn't materialize, that's another challenge for the meteorologists as well is, well, now it doesn't materialize. Now, why should I listen to you? Right. And that, it also kind of ties back to this, from the personal experience now back to these sciences and these misconceptions where, oh, well, this, you know, this hurricane or this flood event, this is a 100 year or 1,000 year flood, or, you know, this storm like this should only occur on average every 1,000 years or 100 years. That means I'm safe for another 100. Absolutely not true, right? You can have multiple 100-year events back to back to back. So it's not, you know, not that it'll occur every 100 years, but they can absolutely occur in multiple years in a row.
Sorry, Jamie, your 1,000-year storm isn't going to keep safe.
Well, no, and that's why I brought it up, because you were talking about communication, and the way we speak about storms can give people a false sense of security moving forward. If we tell somebody, well, this is a 1,000-year storm, this place hasn't seen in the last 100 years or 1,000 years or whatever the number is, they think, oh, well, then I have that long till this is going to happen again. And as Kyle said, that has to do with probability. It has nothing to do with reality of what could happen. So, you know, I think the idea that Becky brought up about communication being really important for the people in the meteorologist communities to make sure that they're communicating that somebody may use a term like 100-year storm, but that doesn't mean that the next year you couldn't be at risk for a similar event.
Yes. And on that note, one of your notes, Becky, you talked about seasonal forecasting limitations and misconceptions. As you mentioned earlier, it's impossible to really forecast an entire hurricane season or anything else. But do people really have that expectation that you guys can see the future?
Yes and no. I think some people do, but I think the majority, at least I hope, realize it's just a general outlook based on very long-term patterns and global patterns. I think for the most part, people don't rely too heavily on those. I mean, we don't know that a storm's going to form until it forms, you know, until we can really see that specific synoptic pattern developing. And by synoptic, I mean larger scale.
Now, Becky, I'm going to channel my mother here because she swears by the Farmer's Almanac.
And, oh, no.
You know, she pulls that thing out and goes, it said there was going to be a storm on this date. And look, it stormed. Oh, no. And I'm just like, oh, Mom. But there are people that do that. And so there are people out there that swear by those prognosticating publications.
Yeah, and those are mainly based on climatology. You know, what is the average precipitation on this date at this location? What's the average high and low? And I mean, there's some value to them. I'll say that very loosely. If you want to get a general idea of trends of what the high or low might be, what your general chance of rain is or snow for a particular date, it's all based on averages that are calculated over decades, really, in most of these sites. So it's just taken with a grain of salt that it's not an exact forecast. It's more just a suggestion of what it could be.
I couldn't resist.
Yeah, that's pretty good, Jamie. So you hear the term a slow start to a severe weather season, Becky. What does that mean?
It just means that there's a typical time that severe weather starts kicking up. And generally that's April and May for the plains. But there wasn't a lot of severe weather in April. We had just a lot of colder systems, and the U.S. generally just stayed on the colder side. So I think there was some thought that maybe people would get, I'm losing my train of thought here.
Complacent.
Complacent. I think that's a good word for it. Just thinking, oh, you know, it's April. We haven't had severe weather. It's not going to happen. I can let my guard down. I don't know that necessarily happened, but I do think that when we say, oh, it's severe weather season, and then nothing happens, I think people may get a little complacent until it really does start happening like it is now. But I guess the key takeaway from that is that weather doesn't care about seasons. And that's one of my big things.
So true.
Oh, it can't snow in the spring. Well, yeah, it can. Mm-hmm. Weather has no idea what month it is. It doesn't know, doesn't care, doesn't cater to that. We could have a hurricane in May, and we have before, and that's well before the hurricane season starts. So it's they're kind of looser definitions, I guess.
I'm going to just check here. Wasn't there a tropical storm a few years back in January one year?
Yes, I remember that. Oh, I feel like it was Alex.
Yeah, it was like it blew everybody away. We had to like pull out the alphabetical system and say what's the first storm called this year?
It was Alex in 2016 of January.
Yeah, I thought
it made landfall in the Azores.
Wow. So, Kyle, your thoughts on the slow start to severe weather season?
Really, it just comes down to that, to echo what Becky said, weather doesn't follow seasons. Hurricanes don't follow seasons, right? You're at your typical peak tornado seasons or peak severe weather seasons. They don't follow those normals. The same way that weather doesn't follow geographic boundaries, the little polygons or boxes that meteorologists like to draw around them, right? And say the storm will only be bad in this box. Well, Mother Nature does what she wants when she wants, and it truly we are, we're trying to predict the behavior of a inherently chaotic system, and that's a whole discussion in itself. But with the slow start to the severe weather season, I encourage folks be thankful for it. Be thankful that we haven't had these big tornado years, these big severe weather years. Like, I hope the events are isolated and they continue to be so. And yes, well, it may not be as exciting for some of us as meteorologists, those of us that do enjoy, chasing tornadoes and these other storms, but weather has a human impact. And that is what is at the bottom line of all of this. Weather has a human impact. And what we've talked about here, the stories from the survivors, to hear what they go through, I don't want tornadoes to occur. When they do occur, they need to be in an open field somewhere. Yes, I know the farmer's losing his crop and all that, but if it's not impacting structures or affecting human lives, that's the best kind of severe weather for me. And sometimes no severe weather is great severe weather. So keep that in mind and keep that in perspective as well.
Well said, Kyle. So as we wind down here, Becky, you want to throw out just a few salient points on hurricane season planning?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I probably threw out a few earlier, but it really comes down to understanding your risk and just taking a close look at where you live. Do you have flood insurance? Do you need flood insurance? Do you know your evacuation routes? Do you have a plan for your family, where you're going to meet, how you're going to contact and connect with each other if you're separated when something happens? What kinds of things do you need to take with you? A lot of times we recommend that people have a go bag that's, you know, full of clothes, toiletries, snacks, any medication that's needed, a first aid kit. Water is always a good thing. Just keep a 24-pack of water in the back of your trunk. Keep your gas tanks full. A generator is a big one. After Sandy, the closest that you could, the nearest generator you could find along the East Coast was like 100 miles into Pennsylvania, which is well away from the coast. You couldn't find a generator. So a lot of things like that, just really making sure that if something happens, if you have to go without power for an extended amount of time, that you are prepared for that. Let's see, looking at the ready.gov website.
Kyle made a reference to ready.gov and looking at the hurricane. They have a lot of good information on that site. That's a good place to go for just about any kind of hurricane information. So, Joe, I don't know that you get hurricanes so much in Memphis, but you certainly deal with the aftermath of them. Any thoughts from you on this?
Well, we do, you know, get the remains of the storm to some extent. Once they've spent most of their energy on the coast, they tend to work ourselves in our direction. And, you know, I think these guys have been very on target with the need for, you know, preparation. And we've talked about that a lot here before. It's, you know, you can't take this stuff too literally. You have to realize that all of these predictions are done in terms of percentages and probabilities, and that's just as good as the technology is now. And you have to have a bit of common sense to understand that, I think, and appreciate the fact that nobody's going to be able to predict things 100%. And therefore, you need to be prepared for the worst and hope for the best.
Good point. Kyle, you want to add anything?
I think it's important to for folks to remember, and you know, we talk about preparedness, right? Knowing your risk, making a kit, you know, having ways to receive the weather information from, you know, verified, you know, official sources, authoritative sources, right? And, you know, it's one thing to talk about it, but it's another to do it. And it may seem for some folks like a task that, you know, it may be insurmountable. Some of our folks that are listening who are maybe part of the prepper community, you're like, yep, I'm set, I'm done. Well, share that knowledge, share what you've done with folks, and encourage friends and family to prepare as well. Because that's really the key, is that, you know, families and folks that are prepared before disaster strikes, they're the ones who are going to be more resilient and able to recover quicker after that storm or whatever it is comes through. And you don't have to make anything special, right? It doesn't have to be, you know, oh, I already have a kit, some kind of preparedness kit, and in that I keep in my car or in my house for a power outage. Well, scale it up a little bit. You don't need to make a separate kit for hurricanes. You can build on what you already have. And, you know, check out if you're not a fan of ready.gov, you should be. It's a really great resource. ready.gov/hurricanes is a good starting point for that particular hazard. But I will also encourage you to search for like your city or your county and emergency management. Just Google that, because your local emergency management folks, who are the experts on what disasters have occurred and could occur in your local area, they have great preparedness tips as well. That's where you find out about, am I in a floodplain? Who do I contact to figure that out? How, you know, flood insurance, as well as evacuation routes and things. Know that ahead of time and have that information prepared and ready to go, so that should a storm be in the forecast, you're ready to weather it effectively.
Well done. You know, so, Jamie,
I just wanted to bring in one comment. You know, our local community here, I know in past events that, you know, in the community, like county fairs and things like that, our local emergency management has done a table where they've had like a go bag that, you know, they've put together and laid out everything that would go in it. And they've also had a contest for kids where, you know, they'd say, all right, you have to gather these supplies. And they give it to the kids and they have to pack their bag, right? And then they show them, well, wouldn't it be easy if it was already packed? and how much time it took them to gather all the stuff and put it in the bag versus have a bag ready to go. And it just teaches children and then thereby families how to prepare for that kind of thing. And I was thinking, Kyle, you mentioned our prepper community. You know, if your neighborhood has a community picnic, maybe offer to put a table out and put your prep bag out there and answer questions about what you have for your preparedness. I think it's a great idea to share that with your neighbors and let them know how they can be better prepared, because we've talked about community resilience before, and communities' abilities to withstand these major events is directly related to how prepared and resilient that community is going into that event. So, and I think that's just as important to help our neighbors and people that we know get prepared along with ourselves.
Good point. Becky made a comment about the Nextdoor app, which is kind of a local, very local community app to connect neighbors with neighbors. I can't get one out here in the country because I don't have enough neighbors, apparently, but that is a good thing, and it seems like most communities have that. You kind of invite each other into it. So that's another way to kind of, like Jamie was saying, maybe connect with all your neighbors and have a preparedness day. I think that's an excellent point. Becky, you want to have the final word here?
I just, everything you guys have said is so on point. And I feel very excited to have had the opportunity to speak with you guys and really just get your perspectives on things as well. I echo everything you guys have said about official sources and preparing ahead of time, and the whole community approach I think is really vital. You know, just rely on each other and make sure that you're encouraging everyone else around you to be prepared and to have a way to receive information.
So Jamie, I wonder how much, you know, every time we have one of these great discussions, how much of this kind of gets incorporated into Joe's head and Jim for the next Paragon training.
You know, and I thought the same thing, because, you know, I wonder, Joe, you know, when you guys put together things for Paragon Medical Education Group and the training you guys do, what role does weather play in that? Do you guys make weather a big part of some of these real life experiential events that you put together?
Oh, I think for probably half of what we do, weather is the core element that directs much of what happens in the scenario training and the preparedness training, whether that's, you know, tornadoes, earthquakes. We haven't done volcanoes yet. I'm looking forward to that one. And certainly hurricanes.
Yeah, I want to see what Jim comes up with for volcano training.
I'm totally going to work on that. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, it could be very scary thinking what Jim might come up with.
I know.
Making lava or something.
So Joe, you know, thinking about that and where people can find more about what you guys do, because I think that we've talked about you guys being our sponsors here on the show for such a long time, and we appreciate all that support. But we constantly are telling people to reach out and talk to you. And I think that the reason we do that is because you can put together such a customized program at various price points to meet the needs of a given community or organization or jurisdiction in a very unique way. But they have to reach out to you and talk to you about it to learn what those things are. So where can they reach you?
Well, thanks, Jamie. Yeah, we definitely love to talk to people because it is a very customizable experience. And, you know, I think it's so important to talk with the customer to some extent and make certain that what we're doing is going to work for them on many, many different levels. So we would encourage folks to reach out to us. You can find us on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com. You can obviously find us on the Disaster Podcast. We have a Facebook page as well, Paragon Medical Group. Or on Facebook as well. And as I said earlier, the Disaster Podcast is always a great way to reach us.
And again, we just want to thank you for that. And I guess maybe you guys will get your volcano training, get to go to Hawaii and do some firsthand volcano training sometime in the future. I wish that for you, because it would be nice to go to a nice community.
Yes, I sense the need to go to Hawaii and spend, a month or two studying volcano response.
That's awesome. Becky, we want to thank you so much for coming on the show. And I'd like to put it out there that, you know, if we end up having another active hurricane season and Sam and Joe are on the road, maybe we can bring you in here with Kyle and myself, and the three of us can kind of do our reporting from back at home and talk about what they're doing out there in the field at the same time. We'd love to invite you to come back.
Yeah, I would love that. This has been phenomenal. I feel like I've learned so much from you guys. It's actually really a privilege to talk to a lot of people in the field that I'm trying to get into. So thank you for inviting me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Where can folks find you if they want to reach out to you, maybe follow you on Twitter or somewhere else on social media? Is there a place that you'd recommend they start?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very active on Twitter. My handle is WX_Becks, B-E-C-K-S. I am the only Becky D. Podwin that I know of on Twitter, so certainly search for me there. I'm on Instagram, the same handle, WexBecks, just without the underscore. And those are the main places that I hang out, so feel free to connect on there.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And we'll make sure we have links to all that in the show notes for people to follow. And we'd always, if you're active on Facebook, we welcome you to come in and join our Facebook community, our Facebook group for the Disaster Podcast over there. We'd love to have you in there as well. We have some discussions about each episode each week, and questions come up from the audience quite frequently.
Ooh, I just asked to join the group.
Awesome. I'll say we'll have a race, see which of us gets to let you in first. Probably Kyle, because I'm talking right now. But yeah, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This has been awesome.
Kyle, where can folks find you?
Well, Jamie, folks can find me on all the social media channels under the handle WXKyleNelson. So feel free to follow me on Twitter, connect with me in the Facebook group, the Disaster Podcast Facebook group, or add me as a connection on LinkedIn. I'd love to continue the conversation.
And Sam, how about you?
Well, you know, it's funny because I am so connected to Kyle that I get a message on my phone literally every time he likes something. So I don't know how that works, but I always know what Kyle's doing. And that's kind of how...
You know, that's not creepy at all, Sam.
Seriously, huh? Yeah, it's a little weird. Yeah, he likes everything. But I am on the usual social media places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11 on the Facebook site. So we're looking forward to having Becky there in case people have more questions. And Kyle's always there to answer weather questions as well. And on the disasterpodcast.com website. And where do we find the PodMedic?
Well, you said it. And you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media channels out there. So look me up, friend, follow, or otherwise keep up with what I'm doing over there. And we just want to thank you all for checking in with us here, whether you get us through disasterpodcast.com or over on our Facebook group or via any of the various podcasting channels and communities out there where we put the podcast out. We just want to thank you for following what we do and welcome you to come back for the next episode after this one and check out back episodes as well. We try to cover a variety of different things, and it's been great to kind of visit weather in such an in-depth way in this episode. I really enjoyed it, and you know, we've talked about a variety of different things, not so much about austere medicine, but yet weather definitely affects how people manage medical scenarios in the field.
Absolutely. And I think I'll have to change up the tagline a little bit. Disaster weather is not our everyday weather.